thought leader and influencer. This is Luba Mayegiso and the Africa Report.
Luba Mayegiso, a very, very good morning. Time is 8:40. How are you?
Good. How bad? I've been struggling with a voice that's been coming and going and disappearing on me.
Look, I think it's very sexy on you, Luba.
Well. You know, when you've got to do a lot of public speaking,
yeah,
that doesn't qualify.
No.
What a brave topic you guys had this morning.
Yeah, and we were even accused of being a bit patronizing, but I'm really not I didn't think we were that... Sorry, which one are you talking about?
He's talking about the one with David.
Are you talking about the divorce one? Yeah, that's a hard one as well. We've been talking about a lot of very brave topics today, but we're not going to stop now because we're going to continue that conversation, the brave conversation that we had earlier, which is all about what on earth is going on Twitter, and you know, how do we behave like adults and try and rein this in, because it is going completely in the wrong direction. You know, I really did not think that Zinzi Mandela's tweets did her, the country, the Foreign Office any good. I certainly don't think it added to anything particularly. And then we've got someone like Steve Hoffmeyer who just takes it to a completely another level, and it just escalates, and it's impossible. I despair sometimes. What's your thoughts, Luba?
I agree that I think as ambassador she was not the most ideal candidate to wade into it. Mm. But the question though, Howard, is when are we actually going to have this debate and really just have it and be over and done with it? Because I kind of get the sense that we start and then we go into polar opposite camps, and you get shouted down, and we bury it, and then it comes back again a couple of months down the line. And to me, I think it's something that we do need to actually put on the table and say, you know what, let's actually have this discussion.
Luba, whereas I agree with you, and I think you know that that's my philosophy, is let's have all of these conversations. Starting off by talking about people quivering and stealing land, and while I whine and dine here, it's not just constructive, it's completely destructive. In fact, it stops the conversation completely in its tracks, because it's just completely offensive on so many levels. It doesn't contribute to the conversation. I mean, maybe ironically it does, because, you know, that's what we're doing, we're talking about that. But
I was about to say so, because that's usually your favorite line, that, you know, sometimes even through a horrible situation, it sparks a discussion that we need to have.
Right. Well, I don't know if you read my article that I posted on News 24 yesterday. I mean, to me, the most amazing thing about her tweet was this sort of oblique reference to Chris Barnard and a gardener. And because I didn't understand what she was talking about, I looked it up, and I was just, I was invited to this whole wonderful, unbelievable story that's so tragic in so many ways and so sad, but so inspiring just in terms of the person. So it did do some good there, which I acknowledge, of course, in the article.
The challenge, Howard, I think for me, is that whenever we talk about our history, racism, land dispossession, most of us move into camps. And then we just pitch our tents there, and then we start firing from there. And I think that's a real tragedy. And, you know, I looked at a lot of comments. I mean, I tried to look at Steve Hoffmeyer's post. Not many people were supporting him. A lot of them were like, you know what, I think the comments were out of line, but your comments are way out of line.
Yes.
But when I read her, checked her account on Twitter, what's supposed to be her account, a lot of the responses she got were overwhelmingly in support. I mean, you'd get maybe 50 comments in support and then one against her. And I think that for me is the question is, you know, what's the barometer of the country in this issue? I mean, one person turned around and said, she's the ambassador, she shouldn't make these comments, she represents the country, and therefore she represents all the views. Then I said, well, look, tongue in cheek, if she is the ambassador, land expropriation is an ANC policy, so she's not out of line in that regard. And, you know, but the challenge is this. If you speak to people on the street, her views are not that outrageous. Yes, let's talk about we can talk about the optics. You know, about
all
of those issues.
Yeah, I don't think it was coffee.
If you strip away, you know, some of the unnecessary venom, the content is kind of synonymous with what people think, and there lies the issue. But for me, I think what puzzled me was this: she's a Mandela child. And then I asked myself, and I said, often over the last 20 odd years, when I've spoken to my black friends, there's always been this grumble that, you know, Mandela didn't quite do, you know, in the CODESA negotiations, the land issue wasn't resolved. So there's been kind of silently blaming him as one of the leaders in negotiations and the first government that this issue could have been addressed and he never did. So for me, it was a bit interesting to find that, you know, one of his kids would turn around and say, we need to address the land issue, because then the question was, what discussion did you guys have at home? Because I know her late mother, Winnie, came out with views almost similar to hers. So for me, I think the real interesting thing was what discussions actually took place in the Mandela household about land. You know, because by all accounts, it doesn't seem like they were on the same boat. You know, the father and the mother and the kids. And that I just found peculiar in some ways, that now you're getting these views that are surfacing, which are not really helping. And I think our problem as a country is we never dealt with the issue, and it becomes more difficult to deal with it now. It's an emotive issue. But you know what, Howard? Here's my challenge. When I walk around South Africa, taking the DA MP's issues into account as well, Phumzile Mandela, I believe the overwhelming majority of South Africans want to live together and can have conversations about many issues. But then there's a fringe that is on the extremes, that's driving the narrative. And there lies our problem, is that the majority in the middle kind of become spectators and don't really get involved in the discussion. So what we hear is AfriForum on the one side, and then we hear the EFF on the other side, and then in the middle, there's a vacuum. Many people who are quite balanced in their views really want to build a united South Africa, but we're not having a discussion. We don't have voices. We're somehow muted, and we'd rather get entertained by the polar extremes that we're hearing.
Yeah, I mean, there's the research shows, in fact, that that if you were had to if Twitter was the way a measure as to how people were voting, there's no question that the EFF, for example, would have been the leading party, because yes, that's where more noise comes from than anything else. Most people, the majority of people, it would seem, is exactly as you say, actually aren't interested in this divisiveness, and it's a problem. I mean, to be frank, what got me to write that article that I didn't particularly initially want to get involved with and write about, because I thought things were had been said. But when I read a tweet from, I don't remember whose account it was, at the EFF, saying something like, anybody that criticizes Mandela over any racist who criticizes her will be dealt with in the strongest way, or something like that, I thought, you know what, you're not going to silence me. I am going to write an article. I'm going to try and make it as balanced as I possibly can, but you will not tell me not to write an article, because this is exactly what's going on, and you are seeing this overwhelming. I mean, what saddened me more than anything was when she came back onto Twitter after I think it was an incredibly poor taste. It was divisive as a wine and dine. I wonder how quivering people, you know, whatever. I just think it was appalling on so many levels. And I happen to agree that this conversation about land reform has got to be had. And it's something that we've spoken about many, many times. So I don't, I'm not in that camp, but
here's my question.
What I wanted to say was, when she came back onto Twitter, the overwhelming support for her saddened me beyond words. It broke my heart, actually, when I saw that nobody was saying to her, people weren't saying to her, you know what, you were wrong. You don't disrespect people like that. It was almost the reaction to it. But yet when Steve Hofmeyr tweets appalling things, there's very little support for him. People are coming out and saying, across the board, white, black, Afrikaans, English, you know, you're appalling. You're awful. Stop it. Go away.
I think in her case, the end justifies the means. But, you know, let's go back to the Guptas, and we had this conversation. Do we not have a problem as South Africans that we get entertained by things that we should take far more seriously? And I think in some ways, when I read the comments responding to her Twitter, a lot of them were kind of edging it on, and in a way that you actually asked yourself, are these people really being serious and genuine? I somehow think we approach these things in a humorous manner and we get entertained and we almost see it as some real, you know, life drama or comedy. And whereas it's something very serious and deadly serious. And I think when the Gupta issue came out, we were entertained. When the Zondo Commission came out, we were entertained. When the EFF hit Parliament and chairs started flying, we weren't worried about the substance of the discussion, but at the theatrics. And I think somehow as South Africans, we failed to appreciate the gravity of an issue and then rather worry about the peripheral issues. And the sense I got here is, it's almost as if she was playing to an audience, a crowd, and they were responding to it. But none of them, if you read the comments, I mean, nobody was really getting into the issue, into the meat of the issue. There were no solutions that, that were being suggested or anything practical. But it was more a case of, we love you, you are mother, you are daughter, you are this, and we're here for you, we support you. I mean, it was all superficial. I mean, you know, over 1,000 of them. And there for me is a problem is that nowhere in that, in all of those tweets, did the discussion move forward other than her making outrageous claims. And we're now a couple of, you know, days down the line. People are very angry. But at the end of the day, what has she actually said that's constructive? And what has actually come out of that discussion that takes us forward in any way? Nothing. And that for me is a tragedy, is that we get caught up in almost a social media kind of, gamesmanship. But the issue is still on the table. It hasn't been addressed. She hasn't put down any solution that I found. Nobody has. And I think that for me is a tragedy, is that we get caught up into seeing this thing, this like theater, and it will blow over and then somebody else will pick it up again a couple of months down the line. But at the end of the day, when do we really discuss the issue? And I agree with you that the way she did it as a diplomat, puts, you know, Durko in an impossible position. And government. I mean, it's not something that as a diplomat you should go on your own, even if you think that your view, you know, reflects that of the majority. It may, but still it's not her position. That's something that should sit with the ministry here in South Africa or the president. But the question though, Howard, is why are we entertained? Almost like, you know,
I'm actually going to bring kids. I'm going to bring David Abramson, psychologist, into this conversation. David, why are we entertained? And I think Luba's right. I referred to it in my article as well. There's a certain amount of glee that we get and that is exhibited. It's exactly what Luba's saying. What do you think?
I think we have to keep in mind that all humans are social creatures, and I think we're constantly trying to fulfill our basic emotional needs. And with technology, I think we've found a vehicle where we can fulfill these needs. I mean, whether it's validation, social acceptance, sense of belonging. And, we do it without much thought because, the ability to actually communicate these thoughts, even if they're impulsive thoughts or they thoughts that we would just normally say to the people around us, we're now able in those moments, to put them out there. And again, it's so interesting from a psychological point of view, and I know we're looking at it more from a political point of view, but from a psychological point of view, to actually, use that vehicle to...
But Steve Hoffmeyer, for example, David, has to be getting something back for this, whether it's an adrenaline rush, dopamine, validation, he's got to be feeding something. Otherwise, why would he do this?
Absolutely. And I think for me, that's what people are looking for. They're looking for that validation. And as you say, then you sit and you wait in many ways. I don't think people put tweets out there and then just, leave Twitter. It's really about who's going to agree with me, who isn't going to agree with me. And I think that does fuel the fire. Because then you start to feel affirmed and it feels like, and again, it does play into people's, sides where they would put out their thoughts that they would rather keep to themselves or their close friends and family. It encourages them to say, there's someone who's
agreeing with me.
And a high profile person.
It's true. Look how many followers they've got.
Look, I'm going to agree with, look how many other people agree. And I think for me, it can be very dangerous where we are, speaking about impulsive, very, very primitive thoughts before we've thought them through, before we've had discussion about them. And we do, as human beings, have these, have impulsive thoughts, have thoughts that we don't talk through, but we haven't had the vehicle to speak about them before we've actually mediated them. And I think, again, we look for that social acceptance.
Howard?
Yes.
you know, I have to agree with David, because I remember a time here in Cape Town where at UCT, the Palestine Solidarity Front Forum wrote a scathing article about me, and they called me an extreme right-wing Zionist and many other things. And I have to admit, I didn't view that as scathing. Thought, well, that's interesting. At least they've noticed that I'm here. So if you're somebody like Steve Hoffmeyer and you think you're fighting for a cause, when you get a reaction from the other side, it kind of validates that I am actually fulfilling some role. So as crazy as it sounds, for him, it's not doom and gloom. He's probably quite excited that I'm generating the kind of, you know, noise and media attention that I need to. So that's the sad thing, is that I think what David is saying is that 20 years ago, we'd be talking in homes over braais, over dinners about these issues, and they would just remain there, and they would never build up to kind of trending. But now, because there's Twitter, they can trend. So I can put a comment that I would be, you know, saying to my mate over a beer, I can put it on social media, and then thousands of people can see it. And I think there lies the power of social media. But again, you see, the challenge for me is, has it actually advanced the debate? And that's my problem.
I believe it hasn't. No. I believe it hasn't.
Yeah. No, it hasn't. And there, I think this is where we need to be able to distinguish between...
And Luba, worse than that, I'm sorry, worse than that is it actually takes us a step back, because yes, what it does, and the comment that you made earlier, I think is so true, is that it pushes people further back into their camps instead of, because of the divisive nature of the tweets, rather than kind of relaxing those borders, that we can actually start to have conversations in a positive productive way.
I'll leave you with this. I think that there are people who want to see a negative image of our country. And the unfortunate thing is, this kind of episode confirms in their mind that, you know what, these guys aren't going anywhere.
Absolutely. That's my worst.
And this society is doomed. And that, for me.
And Luba, sorry, this is on both sides. You know, you've got, I mean, and it kills me, all these ex-South African groups, people overseas looking back and you say, and they say, you see, look what she tweeted. And then you've got people who are saying, and within the South African context, you see, look at the Steve Hoffmeyers. They're never going to change. It is so, so destructive. We do have to leave it there. That said, we can have productive conversations, and if they just asked us, we would solve most of these issues between Lindy, David, me, and Luba. No question about that. Luba, you have a fantastic day, and we'll catch you.